the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to the 100th flagship episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Len, how many things in your life do you think you've done 100 weeks in a row?
In tennis, I can't say I've done that 100 weeks in a row. I'm trying to think.
No. Probably not much, honestly. 100 weeks.
We have with tennis. I may have. It's going to be close. I play indoor too. At least I have a lot in the past. It's got to be the only other thing I could think of. Play Switch? No, there's days I don't play the Switch.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of anything I've done 100 weeks in a row. My shake streak is less than 700 days. I've probably given my wife a kiss 100 weeks in a row. I mean, I hope I have.
But these are things,
very simple things. But the point is, the list is very short. And yet you and I have done every Monday, with some exceptions. Sometimes I'm not here. Sometimes you're not here. A flagship show on Monday night every week for 100 weeks. How do you feel? Like, how's that? This is crazy. I am excited at what the show has become, and I'm thankful for the messages of support we've gotten over the 2 years we've been doing the show, and from people today and yesterday about the 100th show as it kind of drew near. I am thrilled at what this has become. And I think I speak for Len too when I say that really us showing up here every Monday is part of the equation. It's an important part of the equation, I'll be honest. But the other part is really the community that's been built around the show. Like if I look at the number of plays we get, it's, you know, pretty steadily growing. Same as Bitcoin price, right? I look at the bottoms, not the tops, and the bottoms continue to go up. If I look at my own personal Twitter following, you know, I think it's done a 5x or so since we started doing the show. And I follow many of you guys and look at as many of your comments and messages and all the feedback, good and bad, that I can. And really it's that community around the show that is as big a piece as us showing up. So, you know, we want to thank you personally for that. I don't know, Len, you want to add anything to those sentiments?
Nothing except thank you to everybody. The comments are very, very awesome. Nice. So thanks for sending them in. And yeah, it's going to be, we're going to rip through this show pretty quick because like Joey's mentioned on Twitter, it's time to, you know, maybe bring a couple of people on board here.
We want to do it. I don't have my, I'm going to pull up the account here on my phone because I don't have it signed in on my laptop. And I'll have a look at the replies here. Let's see.
Hopefully they're good. People, this is an opportunity. Anyways, Joey, while you're doing that, I'm going to just, you know, get a few things done on my end because Fountain, two things with Fountain. Number one, I'm going to be interviewing them this Wednesday at noon Eastern. It's going to be an early one because they're in the UK. But number two, we have boosts and with boosts with comments on Fountain. So I just want to rip through them quick before we go any further. Yeah. Mo BTC Dick says, made my second Lightning purchase of a Bitcoin mug from Tommy on Twitter. His wife does great custom stuff and his daughter makes bracelets that they both accept Lightning. Shout out to them. So I took a look to see on his Twitter account who it is. It's Tommy B. Callahan III.
Yeah, the guy with the Chris Farley. Right, nice. Okay, great.
Well, that's the person that's selling those mugs. So just because he didn't mention it, I decided to give him a shout out here. Got Joey's Achilles. He couple of tweets here from him, I got to say. So, wow, Joey took a pause from the pod again. At this point, there might be more pods with guest hosts than Joey co-hosting. He also writes that I'm sure Joey would prefer a boost with ETH, but all I have is to say sorry, not sorry. So I'm going to leave it at that. That's a couple of funny comments.
Maybe we'll add a segment, Len, the weekly Well Simple staking rewards update. How many cents did I get this week?
Just curious. I mean, does it get updated daily, weekly, monthly? Like,
I'll tell you right now. I haven't looked at it.
Somebody that's not an ETH aficionado, I have no idea how often he's taking the rewards.
That's a shot.
You're the closest that there is on this show.
The rewards get updated every week. So the last update was on the 20th.
Okay, so it's weekly.
It's pennies. So I don't know. Whatever, man. It's fine. Okay. It's like $200 or whatever it is. I'll never get back. It's just sitting there now. It's never to be unstaked until the Ethereum Foundation tells me I'm allowed.
They give you the green light where you actually take the money out or the ETH.
Right.
What a disaster that's turning. But anyways, has anybody replied to our Twitter?
People are gun shy, man. This is the same problem we had with the Loveline. I got a couple of Loveline DMs, but not enough for a show. I'll tell you what. We'll do the episode. If people have something they want to come on and talk about for the last, like, I don't know, half hour, we'll do like 5 minute segments. Feel free, man. Send me a DM, my account on Twitter, Joey Tweets, and I'll just flip you the StreamYard link and we'll do them one at a time. You come with a story or question or whatever, and we'll talk for 5 minutes. I think it's only fair. We give you guys an opportunity to do it. Now, I know this chat's buzzing all the time, and the show we did with D last week, the chat was on fire too. So I know people are listening and watching. I can see that people are here. Don't be shy. Feel free to hop on with Len and I. We don't bite. It's a fun time. We've had a lot of guests over the almost 2 years we've been doing this, and every single one I think was pretty good. So
yeah, if people want, I'll even step off and let you co-host with them.
No problem. What do you mean?
Maybe we could find a replacement for me finally. Somebody competent that actually do this. Rather than me just fumbling my way along here. Anything else we want to go on here? I just
want to talk about the sponsor, EasyDNS, the hosting service and website domain provider for people who care about privacy, independence, sovereignty, and Bitcoin. Mark Jetovic, the proprietor, good friend of this program. He's been a co-host, he's been a guest, and we are in process right now building a website. Len and Mark and I have a group DM on Twitter that I'm slowly chipping away at things that I really probably should know as someone who's under 50 years old, but I don't. And I think, Len, you know, we haven't said this anywhere, but we're going to start putting stuff on the website, basically ASAP. I think it's going to be at first a short summary of the show with some notes and some commentary. And from there, who knows where we'll take it. So look out for that in the next, month, year, however long it takes me. I don't know. but we are going to do it. Yeah, we are going to do it at some point. And when we do it, I want it to be good, and I want you guys to get value from it. So EasyDNS, if you got a domain you want to slide over there, or you want to start thinking about building a website, hosting your content on a place where you don't have to worry about getting canceled. You can also get emails as well, which we're not going to do, but it would be cool to have like an @CBP email. But we like Mark, we like his DNS. And I think you guys are going to see a quality product coming from the CBP on his platform. And we're thrilled to have him as a sponsor. So go check him out.
And you could pay not just in CAD.
In Bitcoin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Outstanding. You can't beat that, man. Mugs.
Yeah.
How many people are offering hosting and domain services for Bitcoin? None. Mark, actually, I was listening to Bomb Thrower TV, and he said this on our show, I think, but I'll repeat it here. It kind of made me laugh. For a guy who knows as much about Bitcoin and, you know, sort of the internet broadly as he does, he didn't actually buy any Bitcoin until I think last year or 2 years ago. He took all his Bitcoin stack from people paying him in Bitcoin for EasyDNS and related services. So talk about a hodler. Since 2013, he's been taking Bitcoin, and now here he is, you know, a decade later, making his first buy because it was just too good to pass up now. Can't beat that, man. Strong hands, yeah. Strong service. Look them up.
Yeah. All right. And with that, we could just dive into the price of Bitcoin to see where we are at, because it's been a pretty good week. And, do you have it?
Can we talk? Yeah. I got 24,818 US. Well, you do Canadian. Then I want to talk a bit about this chart. I'm going to pull this chart up.
Oh, it's TA time. So it's 33,405 in Canadian dollars. So let's see this chart.
Yeah, because the number of people, including our group chat, by the way, who are like suddenly hyped on every little price move up to toward 25,000. We need help at 25,000.
We all need help.
We're all desperate for help here, okay? But we need real help at 25,000 because this is not my chart. I'm not going to bring it up. If you pull up the 200-week moving average, you can see that the 200-week moving average is compressing that price at around 25K. So we closed yesterday a little lower than 25. It drags that down a tiny, tiny, tiny bit, or it stops the acceleration a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. got to get over that hump. A lot of people are going to be watching that level, and there's some key candle resistance there as well. So thing is, once you flip that, that's a pretty strong resistance, and so it'll become a pretty strong support. It's really what you want. I think it's a key time for Bitcoin. And like we've talked about, there's at least some consideration here being given to risk assets becoming friendly again for the average investor. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit in the show. But yeah, just that 25K level, we want to see a close above that, and we want to push through. I see in the chat, TA is noise. It's noise to some, but you know, when you look at that line, it's pretty clear that there's a lot of money watching that line and waiting to decide what to do. Very clear. And
put it in context. You have to put it in a context too, Joey, that the number we're seeing now at 25,000, that's in today's dollars. Think about it. You know, we have inflation that's driving down the cost of driving up the cost of everything and devaluing the US dollar at that. So if you take into consideration is 25, that's the number you're looking at, 25,000 today. That's like $300 back in 2009. So if you look at the price of Bitcoin, we're kind of, you know, at the point where Bitcoin was when it kind of started, where it was just, you know, a few hundred dollars after a year or two after it started. So it's nothing really has changed because the US dollar just got devalued significantly since then. So we'll see what happens moving forward. 69,000, that was last year. So we got to be at 150,000 to make that in equal dollars moving forward. So
we'll talk about some bullish predictions because there are some that we're going to be talking about on the show here. I got a few things pulled from the ARK investment big ideas deck. I don't know if you've seen that, but Kathy is about as bullish as I can.
She has to be. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to give you the options here. We could do the Clown World. We could do the Bitcoin News because I got a little bit of Bitcoin news.
Let's do Bitcoin News. Let's do Bitcoin News. Yeah. Let's
rock and roll with that.
And then you pick after that.
All right. So we have the stablecoin issuer Paxos, and they're under the gun right now. And before I talk about that, I think we mentioned it last week, but if not, they have burned $700 million worth of Binance USD, the BUSD, in a period of time of only 27 hours. And this is because of regulatory pressures, and all according to CoinDesk. And over $2 billion worth of BUSD in total was withdrawn from a lot of different exchanges and burned. So that's a lot of it that's just disappeared. And that's about a 6% decrease. And they've been ordered to do a stop minting of the stablecoin, the BUSD. And there's a report that it's going to be the SEC is going to be suing Paxos for selling BUSD because it's deemed potentially to be a unregistered security. And as a result, a lot of investors that had money in BUSD, they pulled out and decided to liquidate it somehow. I'm wondering if that might happen to be the reason that there was a bump in the price of Bitcoin this past week, because when you pull it out of BUSD, you got to put it somewhere, maybe Tether, maybe somewhere, maybe Circle, maybe Bitcoin. Maybe that had a small thing to do with the price of Bitcoin moving up this past week. I don't know. I'm just speculating here. But remember, there could be a problem. Binance, they were giving preference as of last September for to use BUSD as a trading pair. So, and if you look at other exchanges too, I mentioned earlier that other exchanges, they liquidated to the tune of around $2 billion. Coinbase, their stablecoin balances, all their stablecoin dropped $411 million in the past week. Bitfinex fell $173 million. So a lot of people are pulling out of all different stablecoins. And I think that's partially the reason why there's a pump in the price of Bitcoin. And CZ is predicting that the crypto industry could move towards a non-dollar stablecoin. And potentially there could be stablecoins that are pegged to the euro, yen, and even he's saying the Singapore dollar. Why the Singapore dollar? Why is he mentioning this? Because that's not a currency that
was it's crazy the things that get mentioned by these people. The Singapore dollar. We got to focus in, Len. Laser focus on this. I am sure the Singapore dollar is not called dollar. It's so prevalent that neither of us know what that currency is actually called. Well, it's got to be called something else.
It may be called a Singapore dollar, but the first time I ever heard anybody say that they're going to potentially make
Singapore dollar sounds like a sushi menu item, Len. It's definitely not the Singapore dollar. It's called something else. Neither of us even know what it is.
Let's check it out in a second. But one thing for certain, CZ, he is, I'm going to say it, he's a smart guy. Cunning but smart. Remember, he was the one that kind of orchestrated the whole accelerated downfall of FTX, where he announced that they're not going to be doing the FTT tokens and all that. So that he was involved with that. Very cunning individual. I suspect that Binance, I've been talking about this for a little bit of time now, that there's smoke here and there may be a fire behind it. And if something were to happen with Binance, it would have a drastic impact negatively to the price of Bitcoin. So there may be opportunities
Let me stop you there.
Go ahead.
Isn't this something happening to Binance though? Like what is the thing that has to happen if all these other things are not quote unquote things happening to Binance? I assume you're talking about the exchange going tits up, right?
Well,
this is really the last shoe to drop. You can see the writing on the wall basically for everything else, especially for US customers. And it's been trending this way for the better part of 2 years now. So what, in your view, and I'm not trying to be adversarial with you, but
no,
in your view, what is the thing that has to happen to Binance if it's not the exchange going belly up? Because it seems to me like everything has already happened or is in the process of happening, quote unquote.
Well, it's got to be the BUSD because they claim it's backed one-to-one. And I just took a look right now. The market cap is, at least it's stated here, $12.8 billion. If it's indeed backed one-to-one, they're okay. But I always suspect they're not. And if they're not backed one-to-one, if there's ever a run on BUSD and people try to get out of that, eventually there's going to be a liquidity crisis. And that could be the one that could potentially be the downfall for Binance. That's what I suspect. I could be totally wrong in my guess here. And I just want to double back. Indeed, it's called the Singapore dollar. And it's actually...
We actually got rugged by the Singapore dollar there. I can't believe that.
Yeah, so there, Singapore... And it's right now it's trading at 1.01 Canadian dollar. So it's almost a parity with the Canadian dollar. There you go.
Singapore is a financial hub, right? So yeah. That's not surprising. That's going to be a strong currency or strong-ish anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... That's it for the Singapore dollar. That's it for Binance. Let's move on. We could talk about the Bitcoin hash rate. And I took a look earlier today. It was hovering around the low 300 exahash per second. It's still, people are still plugging in machines. Is at one point, it was 350 exahash per second, which is a monstrous number. Who's plugging in all this equipment? I don't know. Until we have concrete evidence and somebody saying that they said that they're doing it, we could speculate. Could be some companies, oil, gas companies, maybe countries, who the hell knows? But until we know, it's said for certain, we're just left speculating. But anyways, moving on, CoinDesk is also, I love them as a source, by the way. They're very good at providing great information. They're saying that the Mt. Gox, the saga is actually maybe coming to an end. The two biggest creditors from the Mt. Gox hack, they have elected to get their bankruptcy recovery paid out mostly in Bitcoin. And this is according to people that are familiar with the matter. And what the Mt. Gox is left with after the hack is approximately 142,000 Bitcoin. They also have 143,000 Bitcoin cash and 69 billion yen. But I want to focus on the 142,000 Bitcoin. Because
I'm cracking up at the Jay's comments in the chat about the Singapore dollar.
Well, we should do something with the Singapore dollar.
I can't believe it. Who can we bring on the show who's an expert in the Singapore dollar?
I'll tell you behind the scenes because there's somebody that it's close to me that actually is. But I don't want to say it. But... Let's go back to Mt. Gox. So that 142,000 Bitcoin that they're going to be releasing in the next little while, that's about the same amount of Bitcoin that MicroStrategy has. So theoretically, if they were to dump it, well, release it to the people and they dump it on the market, that would be essentially the same type of impact as MicroStrategy dumping all their Bitcoin on the market. It would be pretty catastrophic. But the good news is the two biggest creditors say they're going to take most of their payment in Bitcoin, which is really good because there's been a lot of speculation that the price of Bitcoin is going to tank once this is going to be released. But it looks like these people are going to be hodlers. They have been hodling for this time, all this time, and they're going to continue to do so. So really good thing. Also, just wanted to state here, the creditors, they have options here. They could be they could receive their payment in a combination of Bitcoin, BTC, Bitcoin Cash, or Japanese yen. So those are the options you're able to, who the heck's going to get it in Bitcoin Cash? I'd love to know who it is, by the way. Anyways, moving on. The SEC, they're going to be proposing a modification to the crypto rule. And this could potentially, it's good hodling. So basically, if you're going to be taking crypto for clients, like clients are going to buy and you're going to be holding it on your balance sheet, you're going to be modifying the rules. So it's basically, if you're going to be taking Bitcoin from somebody else for safekeeping or even trading it on your behalf, they have to meet a certain standard that has to be from a quote unquote qualified custodian. And qualified custodians need to keep all assets in custody properly segregated into individual accounts per customer. Advisors mm-hmm. and qualified custodians need to enter into written agreements. Custodians also need to undergo annual audits, provide account statements, and provide records upon request. This, is, I suspect, is going to impact exchanges somewhat, but more so banks, because these banks that are going to be already offering services for clients to buy Bitcoin, and more banks that choose to provide these services, well, they have to meet... Sorry?
No, go ahead. I think you're going to say it. Sorry.
I was going to say they have to meet this type of qualification. And this, be it for good or for bad, this is definitely going to impact these banks moving forward, and also the exchanges too. They're going to have to adhere to these qualified custodian rules. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that.
I just want to add one thing. The U.S. regulatory landscape is actively encouraging banks not to touch anything related to crypto. So when we talk about choke point, on one side, you have requirements that basically can only be met by banks for custodian active custodians of crypto assets, Bitcoin or otherwise. On the other hand, you have the same regulatory bodies, maybe with a different letter, but they're marching under the same banner now more than ever, telling banks they can't touch anything Bitcoin related. So where does that leave people? It leaves people without a way to access the underlying asset. You can only buy the junk on the stock market, the BTCCs, the Ethereum stuff, whatever that token ticker is for the quote unquote trust, you know, GBTC stuff like that. We see how that's going. What you're seeing is a clear effort from regulators to push people away from Bitcoin, whether they understand it or not, or into synthetic Bitcoin stuff like GBTC. Very, very, very strange for people not to be concerned about this. I think some people are. Nick Carter wrote that choke point thing a few weeks ago before this legislation sort of started to take shape publicly. And you know, a lot of people give him shit. Well, it's not choke point. Is this regulatory clarity is what we need? We don't need this. This is not regulatory clarity. This is forcing people away from the asset.
Maybe they're going to be forced to buy into the stablecoin, the Singapore dollar stablecoin. There could be options available for them. And if they do so, they know their money is parked in the
Singapore stablecoin hot wallet. When is Blue, Blue and Sparrow implementing the Singapore
fingers
dollar
hot wallet? Fingers are crossed. But anyway. some interesting news coming out of El Salvador. They're going to be opening up what they call a Bitcoin embassy in Texas. And this is not the first one that they've opened up. They've, in fact, the first ever Bitcoin embassy was opened in Lugano, Switzerland. And they're going to be opening now their second one in Texas. And this is to establish a physical governmental presence to promote cooperation in education and research institutions related to Bitcoin. You talked about how miners should be doing something like this, but it looks like El Salvador seems to be picking up the tabs in terms of educating and providing information to the masses, so to speak. And they're opening one of these offices in Texas. When is one going to come to Canada? I don't know. I'd love to see it. I'm going to walk into it if it's within driving distance of me.
We got to go on like a U.S. swing, you and me. Like leave the women and children at home, okay? And let's just go for 2 weeks. We'll rent a van. We'll do content in the van.
Well, my car, we could gas up the war wagon and take a ride.
I am not getting in that car of yours.
What are you talking about?
Cross country drive.
It's you
have no
fine
AC. You not have any AC. You have no AC, right?
There's windows, Joey. There's windows.
Ah, interesting.
Yes, the windows, they work phenomenally well.
Windows, the intermittent energy of the car world, yeah.
Great. It's always blowing air as long as you're moving. If you stop, good luck. But anyways, let's move on. Last thing I want to bring up is Wyoming. And lawmakers over there passed a bill, get this, prohibiting disclosure of private crypto keys. And the bill is entitled Disclosure of Private Cryptographic Keys. And it's set to take place or take an effect in July. Effectively, it prohibits the forced disclosure of crypto keys, private crypto keys, by the U.S. state courts. That's just the state. So federally, obviously, you're not, you're shit out of luck. So There you go. So I do have one other thing about ordinals. I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Screw that. I'm all ordinaled out. But yeah, the Wyoming thing I think is rather cool. I'd love to know how much input or influence Cynthia Lummis had with that. But I thought it was rather cool.
Probably a lot. And it's good to hear this kind of stuff for privacy. I just want to note here before I get into my comments, we have one person coming on when we're done the stories to talk about something with us. Someone who has never messaged me on Twitter before, but I'm interested in hearing his or her perspective. So we got one taker. Here's what I'll say. As far as like Bitcoin and the asset, okay? Think about in 2017, right? We heard a lot of the same arguments that we're hearing now with a price that was a lot lower, with a network strength and security that was a lot lower, with way more garbage floating around that people thought was going to be successful. Like you can say what you want about the Solana era altcoins and NFTs, but that 2017 cycle, Len, where there was an ICO every 2 days, people were getting airdrops and firing up different wallets. And, you know, Ledger, I remember when I had my Ledger for the first time, like every week they would tweet something out about how they're adding compatibility for more and more and more wallets to the point where they had to get a bigger device, if memory serves, right? I only had the original one, but I think they made another one called the Nano S Plus, maybe before the X, that just had more memory for more wallets, more token wallets. So all this stuff was going on in 2017. What we didn't have in 2017 was the fundies, right? Exahash, all-time high, right? The network security. In the ARK Innovation Big Ideas presentation, which everyone should read. If you're a Bitcoiner, you should read it. There's a lot of hopium in there, but there's a lot of good stuff too. The percentage of Bitcoin trading at a loss, Len, reached an all-time high in 2022. Did you know that? 68%. Of all the people who owned Bitcoin were owning it at a loss at that time. And still, even with FTX, even with the regulatory stuff, even with Gary Gensler putting up these weird, like, I don't know, Instagram style videos, although I do like the background music he uses. I don't think the videos are that good. Even with all that stuff and with people at like 70% people at loss, they still held on to their Bitcoin. It's incredible. You don't see that anywhere else. Like even Apple stock, some of these stalwart blue chip S&P stocks, these guys would not be able to weather a storm like this. If the U.S. government came out and said, we think that cell phones are causing mental health crises in our young people, they are, by the way. If the U.S. government came out and said that, Apple stock would tank. It would tank. We're gonna implement a limit on how much social media can be on phones, what age kids can have phones at, how long they can use phones, and what phones can do. The stock would tank. Bitcoin, on the other hand, subject to much stricter regulation than it was 5 years ago, much stricter surveillance than it was 5 years ago, and a trendy thing for incompetent politicians to point at when they say that there's a problem with the economy and a problem with savings and a problem with this or that, still, the asset holds on. Incredible. As well, in this slide deck, the percentage of coins held by long-term holders has never been higher either. Incredible. Incredible. No one is selling, and all the guys and girls who are bag holding at a loss are just buying more. We're just buying more. Everyone's DCA is still running, right? This is the kind of thing that tells you that you're on, you know, what might be an S-curve adoption, right? You're sort of in a lull right now in the S before you take off. And there's some good stuff from, I don't know if you guys have read this article from Jesse Myers about the Bitcoin valuation and how you draw value. I haven't read it in a couple of days. I should have read it today before the show, because now that we're talking about it, I wish I had written some stuff down. But he makes the case that like when you're trying to price Bitcoin, it's very difficult because the value proposition for something like Bitcoin really is value itself. And so when you look at a price like 25K or whatever we're at, it's hard to imagine that that's really a representative value of the actual value of the token, because what that is basically just a trading price. The value of the token increases, in my view. I don't know if Jesse wrote this. I don't think he did. But in my view, one thing I think he missed is that the value of the token increases as more people view it as having some value. It doesn't have to be $25,000 worth of value or $69,000 worth of value a year ago. It just has to be people view this as valuable. This is something that has value. This is something with network effect. It's something that's worth money. It's worth wealth. It's worth value. That number, whether those people hold Bitcoin now or don't, is only going up. There's not people who thought Bitcoin was valuable who are going the other direction. It's a one-way flow at this point. And so all this stuff is like, super bearish, man. It's super bearish. And I'll say this about the regulatory stuff. I am becoming partial to the opinion that the reason we haven't seen significant regulation against Bitcoin, and rather we're seeing kind of stuff on the edges about miners and KYC and exchanges and stuff like that, custody, I think that the US government now knows that they can't take it down. And I think that if they try, they have to finish it in one blow, okay? You got to cut the head off the snake if you're going to do it. And I think that they realize they can't. Worse, 5 years ago, if they had tried to ban Bitcoin, nobody would have really thought anything of it. It's this up and upstart thing. It's widely used for illegal activity, blah, blah, blah. You pick your narrative. Would have gone probably okay at that point. Between the network security, the sort of lack of decentralization that we have now, there was still quite a bit, but not what we have now. And the most importantly, I think, and the positioning of the US dollar. A lot of people have lost faith in the dollar hegemony in the last 5 years. And so now, how can you tell me that the US government can take this thing down without causing a panic? It would cause a panic, I think. Any reasonable person would look at this and go, whoa, the US government is trying to ban Bitcoin? Why? What's happening there? Why are they trying to eliminate this thing? Is it a threat? That would be the next logical step. And unfortunately for them, the current owner of the Bird app would probably endorse that view as well. He would probably say the same thing. The reason they're trying to ban this is because the dollar is falling out of favor and they don't want an alternative. So Len, I've never been more bullish in my life. This is the best time to be a Bitcoiner. Everyone's building stuff. You got networks like Nostr coming up where the signal is super high. You got shows like ours and others where the signal is super high. And everyone is, I think, experienced enough with these bear markets that they know there's going to be a rebound at some point. Like Boomer said, when he said the TA is just noise, the price will pump when it'll pump. He's at least a little bit right. The animal spirits control this thing in a way that just you don't see in any other markets. And I am excited, man, to see where this goes in 23. By the way, we are 70% to the next halving at this point. So we've talked about this before. The stars seem to align all the time in Bitcoin around the halvings for some reason. And I don't know about you, but it seems to me it's about to happen again. It's outstanding.
It's a lot less supply that's going to be released once the halving takes place. But there's one thing, I mean, I know I don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to have to, because the banning of Bitcoin by the United States, even doing it, it's not going to do anything. It's just impossible to stop it.
It pushes, they can only push bad behavior offshore. Whatever the bad behavior is, it just pushes it offshore now.
But let's look at it through a different angle, because if you ask any normie out there, what's Bitcoin used for? What would be the answer you hear?
I mean, drugs.
The
one would be drugs. Drugs, yeah, guns, so, illegal activity, yeah.
So there's a narrative out there. Right or wrong, it is out there. And that's preventing a lot of adoption for Bitcoin because they have this preconceived notion of what it's being used for. Now I'm going to take this a step further. What if somebody inscribes something on there that is so heinous that it makes adoption very difficult? I'm going to go a step further here.
Hit me.
Now it's there. Somebody's done it. And it's easy to do. Anybody could attack it because they could have easily just, you know, inscribe it. So it could be any bad actor that hates Bitcoin that wants to stop it, do it. Now it's on there. Then you could talk about it in public settings. Oh, look what's on there. It's terrible. It's a database that has it. Every node that has it, it's running it. What company is going to go out there, is going to be able to ask their shareholders, yeah, we're going to buy Bitcoin, put it on a balance sheet. They're going to say, the normies are going to say, no, this is, it's use it for something that you're inscribing something terrible on it.
Mm.
Furthermore, now a country out there, how could a country out there adopt Bitcoin next if the narrative is it's being used to store something that's terrible? It doesn't stop the adoption. It slows it down enough. That's an attack that's easily done with very little money. And you could, through all these lobbyists, they have these politicians in their back pocket and they could make anything work like that.
Unbelievable. You absolutely ruined the vibe of the show. Let me respond to that. Pierre Richard was on Preston Pish's show 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago now. I'm losing track of time here as we come into spring. I feel like I'm having these like long forgotten neural pathways connecting now that the sun is out for more than 3 hours every day. So I'm like in a bit of a trance. They were talking about how, and Preston brought this up, we brought it up, obviously talked to Dee about this last week. the thing is that there's already shit like that on the chain, right? Inscriptions have been around for some time. The ordinals thing is a way to catalog, review, look at these things. It's a lens, like Dee says. That's a great explanation. I like I said to you before the show, and I'll say it again now, I have no really strong feelings on this one way or another, but Dee's explanation, the lens thing, is really spot on. It's the best one I've heard so far. I don't know if it's his or not, but it is very good.
It's the one from Casey. You listen to him talk
with
NBK, and you'll get a clear understanding of how they frame it.
I'll have to listen to him. But like at the end of the day, the stuff is already on the chain, and governments haven't done anything about it now. Now, I guess the other question would be like, is there too much at some point on the chain? Which I think Pierre also said, or someone also said, like. And you and me talked about this long before any of this podcast content started to come out. Like, is there a threshold for unsavory content that the government will not allow? I don't know, maybe. But at the end of the day, it's about narrative formation, I think, for them and for us in some regard. So, you know, do we have a stronger narrative saying that, look, it's an inscription is an inscription is an inscription. You can write whatever you want on there. Anything that's, particularly heinous, great word by you, particularly heinous, should be viewed the same way you would view any heinous thing on the internet. You don't look at it, you ignore it, you take it down if you can. But generally speaking, we have to be above these things as a society. We have tried to be above these things as a society for the entirety of our civilization. We should continue to do that. We shouldn't put tools, arbitrary vice grips because somebody wants to misuse it. The easy argument there is, well, you know, human trafficking, child sex trafficking and drug trafficking and gun running happens on 400 series highways probably every day or every week, but we don't shut down the highways. We put patrol people on there. Everyone who's using that thing properly gets to use it properly. And if the patrol people decide there's something suspicious or law enforcement decides there's something suspicious, they come down and they try and make an arrest. I think this is the way to view this. Much the same way as we view the internet. People do stuff on the internet all the time. The internet is one of the worst places for crime, you know, virtual or physical, that we have ever known as a species, that we may ever know as a species. And still every day you and I, you know, talk via the internet. We send pictures to our friends. We book vet appointments for our pets. I just did that today for my dog. It's time for his physical. I can't believe dogs have to have physicals 100 years ago. They were all living in trees and forests or whatever. But anyway, so, you know, all this to say that there's going to be bad actors, and the precedent has already been set, I think, that one bad actor does not a bad network or a bad tool make. And I think there's a lot of smart Bitcoiners, and we got a lot of money too, Len. We got a lot of money too backing our cause that would support that outcome.
I think this is going to be something we're going to disagree on. So with respect to all that you said, is one thing about having 80 byte limit, in which case you're really limited to putting a link. And there's a fundamental difference between that and storing a picture.
An image,
and there's a picture that is stored on your computer and you're propagating, you're sending it out through the whole network. That's a difference. See, my phone in its current state and any computer, I hope that there's nothing illegal on it. Right. But as soon as you put something illegal on it, there's an issue. Not with the maker of the phone. It's the person that holds that phone that has something illegal, that has a problem with the state. Now, and it's easy, it's really easy to formulate a narrative, because right now we have the narrative that Bitcoin's being used for drugs and all this nefarious stuff. And people bought this, and they have this preconceived notion of it. That same type of entering that data in their head and making them understand what Bitcoin is, that it's now being used to store and send out this information, which as I mentioned, is heinous, it's going to be very easy for them to just eat this up and gobble it up and say, yeah, that's what it is. And now by doing so, then you could just have these very large people. Sure, there's a lot of money in Bitcoin, but there's more money lobbyists that are against Bitcoin. I know. They could easily buy media, newspaper ads, politicians, and get shit done. And it's going to be harder at that point to have Apple buy Bitcoin and add it to their balance sheet. It's going to be harder to get the next country out there to say we're going to.
We haven't talked about Apple buying Bitcoin in probably a year and a half. Hey, man. That was like a first 4 months of the show. Common refrain. When the price was going to 70K, me and you were like, this is going to be the week.
But when, and if that happens, the hill is already very steep as it is. It's going to be even steeper. Not impossible to climb. It just makes it more difficult to do so. And you're going to put more time and effort in order to overcome it. And that's going to be an attack. And that's easily done. Very cheaply done. Just take one person to say, I hate Bitcoin. I'm going to put it on there. It's done. Boom.
Narwhal in the chat brings up a good point. We'll leave it with this because, I don't think we're going to solve this problem that we have tonight. But there's, you know, he has friends who think Bitcoin is stupid, but none of them think it's used for drugs or crime. I think the media has done such a bad job trying to paint this thing as a poor inflation hedge that now all anyone thinks about it is that it's a poor inflation hedge, poor store of value. They maybe don't even think about it as a crime token anymore. That may be true. I hadn't really considered that, but I think there's probably been a sort of an own goal by politicians in the press when it comes to Bitcoin's use case over the last certainly the last 18 months. When was that? When was the all-time high? November 21, right? So about 18 months now. Interesting discussion there. There's going to be more to be said on this in the future, but for now, maybe we should move on to whatever else we got.
Well, let's breeze by the next one, CBDCs, because this we talked about it last week. This week, we got some interesting news that Japan, they announced that they're going to be launching digital yen in April, another CBDC. And so the Bank of Japan, executive director, Shinichi Uchida, I hope I pronounced that correctly. My Japanese is kind of rusty. It's going to be, quote, a pilot program is twofold. First, to test the technology feasible. And second, to utilize the skills and insight to provide businesses in terms of technology and operations for designing a CBDC ecosystem in a possible event of a social implementation, end quote. So this is going to be following a two-year proof of concept, which already has concluded. They are now going to be rolling out this pilot project. But very key here, it's not expected to be used for any actual transactions between retail and customers. So a retail CBDC, in this case, what the Bank of Japan is releasing is not going to be used. So I've been saying this for quite a while. To see a retail CBDC released, it's going to be sometime, if ever, that is going to be reality. And in this case, they are going to be releasing this pilot program, but it's not going to be a retail CBDC. And I know a lot of people are out there are saying that, you know, money is already digital. And to a degree, they're correct, but the CBDC fundamentally is different because you could follow transactions from cradle to grave. You cannot do that right now in the digital money. Once you spend money, it can go somewhere else, and you cannot physically or electronically track that particular dollar, where it came from or where it went to. So it just gets lost in the sauce when you add it to a big account. So a CBDC is fundamentally different than right now what we have. But not only that, the Federal Reserve has some new job postings. I'm not sure if you saw this one, Joey.
And no, I don't comb the Federal Reserve job site, but I can't wait to hear what these are. These are going to definitely be interesting.
Mm-hmm. This is from the San Francisco Fed, and they're hiring three new people. It's going to be, one, a digital currency development person. Second is a lead application development. And the third is a senior application developer. This is all for digital currencies. So the senior application architect, that one, they posted on LinkedIn, and in one day, 23 applicants already applied. So there's already a lot of people that have the skills, at least they perceive to have the skills, and they want to apply and land that job. As for the senior application role, I can say this, that the salary range is between $135,000 and $215,000 US annually. And the lead application developer and the senior application developer both have their range is going to be $215,000 for the first, and the second is going to be $176,000. So they're going to be getting paid decent amount of money. I'm not sure if it's competitive within the ecosystem of San Francisco. I know it's very expensive to live over there. So nonetheless, the Federal Reserve, they are trying to hire people to at least explore this and move this forward. Who the fuck could have seen this coming? This is another W I'm saying for Bitcoin. It's Bitcoiners, because it seems like we've been calling this for a while.
CBDCs, man, I keep on hearing, and I heard this on Ansel Linder's show too last week or the week before. And you and me talked about this like probably 2 months ago when we started to talk more about CBDCs. It seems to be a weekly occurrence for us at this point. It seems to me like the banks think that they're going to need a system that stops people from hoarding CBDCs. Talked about if Bank of England. It sounds like Bank of Japan is going to try something similar. They're going to need two different iterations of it, one for retail, one for businesses or balance sheet settlement. They're like imagining the opposite problem that they're going to have. People are not going to be clamoring for these things. There's going to be people who don't want anything to do with them. They're going to demand to stay in cash or try to stay in cash as much as they can or try to not have these things on their phones or their digital wallets. And to your point, this will open a door to Bitcoin. This will be an unintentional wedge into Bitcoin if it's not already. I mean, the Bank of England, in all their sort of their all-knowing genius, decided to nickname their coin Britcoin. Like, talk about Streisand effect. You don't think at least a few people are going to go, hey, wait a minute, that sounds like that other thing. Is this the same thing? What are the differences? I don't think that the banks appreciate how difficult it's going to be to get adoption of this, even with some inflated, if you want to get your tax return in Canada and in your Fed coin, maybe you get an extra 5% or something like that. I don't know. I don't think that's enough for people. And also, if inflation continues to run at the rate that it's running, 5% won't be enough to convince anyone of anything, unfortunately. So, you know, do you think that the banks are, given that they don't seem to be competent enough to diagnose what the problem is with this sort of system, do you think they're competent enough to ship it? Because it seems to me, Len, honestly, that they might not be competent enough to get this thing to market. There's too many changes in political winds. There's too many like four-year, two-year cycles in politics. I don't know if this will happen. And again, like, not to become a sort of broken record for the sovereign individual, but this is another signpost. Like, as soon as they start doing this, people will just go to places that don't have CBDCs. Like, that's the other thing. You introduce arbitrage in a way that right now it just doesn't exist. People are generally going to see similar tax regimes and similar levels of development all over the world, no matter what country they go to. But if you see certain countries introducing CBDCs, you would certainly just go to a place like Switzerland, who's never going to do this. You know, Brazil, who's never going to do this. All these places, right? That's how you start to see gaps in arbitrage opportunities for people who can work on the road, work remotely, whatever, who have skills, who have Bitcoin even. So I don't see this as much of a threat as you do inside of the decade. I know Bank of England said they're going to ship this inside of 2030. I would guess they're not, honestly. I know Rishi Sunak has a background in tech and is a billionaire, you know, on his own right, of his own volition. But it seems to me that this is really wishful thinking from these guys at this point.
I've always said that a retail version is it's quite a while away. We're not going to see that for some time. It's just the CBDC for, I guess, settling between banks. I guess that's right. Where it's going to be used, and it's going to streamline the whole process. So
that's really what BOE had in their paper, right? The white paper we talked about 2 weeks ago had that exact use case. That was the big one in the white paper.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they could streamline that and do it in such a way that it's behind the scenes and nobody really knows about it, then it would work. And it gives the central bank more control over funding and their monetary policy. This is all theoretical at this point, because it's, you know, we don't have too many real life examples that are out there. I mean, it's been mentioned in the chat several times. Nigeria, China has CBDC, but I haven't followed that whole rollout all too much. So, I mean, with respect to a retail one, I don't know. It's going to be some time away before we see it. And you mentioned Brazil and Switzerland, like, you don't see them doing it, but why not them too? I mean, the other ones are...
Switzerland's entire economy is based on dark money. They're never going to do this. They'll never implement something like this. There's zero chance.
Maybe you're right. I don't know. I mean, but Brazil, I mean, they're closing up more to China now than ever. And China has rolled it out. Why wouldn't they want? And it's a left-leaning government over there. And so I don't know. And it is what it is. So that's my latest information that I have on CBDCs. But we could transition next to Clown World News. And that's the last topic before we go to the Canadian side. And so the Labor Department, they said the consumer price index, it came out for the month of January, 6.4%. That's higher than expected. Up from the previous month. So keep in mind, not only is it hot, as you mentioned, but it's year to year now. So it's a 1 year sample size. If you take a look at, if you want to get a greater analysis of something, you get a larger sample size, because then you're less subjected to anything that's happening in a very small, but 12 months versus 24 months makes a massive difference. And the thing that CPI is kind of impact is it impacts quite a few things on people's lives, because it's not just they're looking at it in the past, but it's also moving forward, like military pensions, for instance. This is people that they look at this, and if the number isn't accurately reflecting how much it costs, the actual cost of living, if they haven't increased, like if they fudge in such a way, people that are relying on pensions, like military pensions, they're going to be falling further and further behind. So it does impact people negatively. So it's not just a number we point at and laugh at. There's a real underlying issue here that should be addressed. And if you look at, in fact, at military pensions, it was $173 billion in 2021. So it's quite a lot of money that's being spent. So fudging the numbers can save the U.S. government quite a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. But they're saying that rising shelters, with respect to the CPI, rising shelter costs accounted for half the monthly increases. Half. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So I know that they're talking about the 4% target and now and eventually a 2% target. They may potentially get there, and I'll explain why. Because once they start capturing data in the latter half of 2022 and early 2023, in the past 6 months or so, there hasn't been relatively any new shocks to the system. We haven't had a new war that came out, the war between Ukraine and Russia started 12 months ago, for instance. Supply chain issues kind of, you know, they are what they are, but it's not any new supply chain issues. They're there, systemic problems. So there's, and all the hangovers from 2020, well, there's still hangovers from. So once you say they start capturing data starting from the end of 22, middle or to the latter half of 2022, a 2% target is likable. It's likely could be a reality.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But all this to be said, it doesn't change much, because if you look at all the garbage that's going on there, and I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent, you know, the crumbling infrastructure in the United States, airports, they're pathetic compared to other airports in the world. Roads they're bad. Rail, we see almost on a daily basis another derailment, and bridges, they're old and these got to be replaced. But this is a shit it's a ticking time bomb. But going back, the producer price index, the PPI, that also rose 0.7% month to month in January. That also exceeded market estimates. And if you look at the chart of the PPI, it rose rapidly from March 2020. And it was at that point, from March 2020, it was actually negative. So from March 2020, it was negative, and it peaked at March 2022. And now it's been declining sharply. If you look at it, it's like just sharp up, now sharp down.
Yeah.
Can it continue to go sharply down to the point where it's going to negative again? I don't know. I mean, this is stuff that's well beyond me, but I'm looking at the chart. It seems to be, I don't know, it's on its way there. Anyways, moving on. The Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, they described its projections of the federal budget and the U.S. economy under the current law for this year and the decades that follow. It's a singular, not plural. The deficit is projected to total $1.4 trillion in 2023. So they're expected $1.4 trillion deficit in 2023, and it will generally increase in the coming years, averaging $2 trillion from 2024 to 2033 period. The CBO expects economic growth to stagnate and inflation to slow in 2023 in response to sharp rise in interest rates in 2022. After that, the CBO projections output grows to a more robust pace, and they're saying it's going to reach the 2% goal. Essentially, they're saying that they're going to be tacking on a fuckload of debt, $19 trillion. This is over the next decade, and this is a conservative number that they're saying. The debt to GDP is going to, I mentioned the chart, it's a sharp incline, 45 degrees to the right and up. And this is as per their estimates, which is very conservative. This is if all goes well.
Yeah.
And if there's no economic cycles that are systemic that should have happened but didn't happen yet to blow up the whole system, because 2020 was kind of a manufactured slowdown in the economy. We never had that natural humongous blow up that should have potentially come or may potentially come. And when it does, I don't know. They're saying that the CBO is also saying if the debt limit remains unchanged, the government's ability to borrow using what they have right now, the extraordinary measures, will exhaust by July and September 2023. Essentially, if they don't change the debt ceiling limit, they will default. And as for Janet Yellen, she was saying, America has paid all its bills on time since 1789.
What a fraud.
And, well, you know, we have 19, 1979, 1933, 1861. Also the technical defaults of 1968 and 1971, but who's counting here? And I'm not trying to nitpick. I mean, she is the chair, or she was a previous chair of the Federal Reserve and also the Secretary of the Treasury. So she's got some pedigree here. Also, in 1971, you know what also happened then? She got her PhD from Yale. You figure somebody that have got their PhD in the year that they defaulted, they had a technical default, you would have understood what happened. This is economy. She got her PhD in economics. I don't understand. It's just, I guess the information went in one ear, not the other for her. But anyways, things could go really off the rails here with the United States. If you look what's going on, there is, looks like, division in the United States. It looks like it's very divisive community right now in the United States. Also, there's a war going on in Eastern Europe, and it's by the day it's kind of dragging in the United States more and more into this. In fact, polls finally are starting to show that there's waning support of sending aid to Ukraine, and right now tens of billions have already been sent, but they're saying that the Ukraine is burning through ammunition faster than the U.S. and NATO can produce it. And this is according to CNN. The U.S. and allies have sent nearly $50 billion in aid and equipment to Ukraine military over the past year. To keep that up and to rebuild its own stockpiles, the Pentagon is racing to rearm, embarking on its biggest increase in ammunition production in decades. And to put it in proportion, the U.S. defense industry is on a war footing despite America technically not being at war. That's where the GDP is. The defense budget is one of the largest line items of the United States government. And they're now spending a whole lot of money to replenish the supplies which has already been given to Ukraine. There's a good chunk of the GDP that's already out there. It's government spending. And here's where things really get dicey, because I'm talking about Ukraine. Mitch McConnell, he's saying, quote, defeating the Russians in Ukraine is the single most important event going on in the world right now, end quote. That's tough, man. If you look at the Scranton Army ammunition plant, they're making 11,000 artillery shells a month. The Ukraine military fires off that many shells in a few days. That's an incredible number of shells that are being fired off. The United States can't even produce enough to keep their own supplies stagnant or flat.
Kamala what about Harris, the strategic shell reserve? Can we drain that?
That's a good one. We should have that. It's been depleted a long time ago, according to this. Kamala Harris is saying that Russia has committed crimes against humanity. This was a proxy war, but it looks like it's slowly transitioning into a traditional armed conflict. And the U.S. intelligence is saying that China is considering also providing arms and ammunition to Russia. This is getting scary. Now you're getting China involved, and you don't want to piss them off because this could blow up into something really big here. Not only that, look at all the money that's being sent to Ukraine. And not only the president of the United States was saying, I don't have to say if it was a gaffe or anything, but he's saying all the money over there is being sent over there is also helping Ukraine pensions. Fuck!
That's incredible.
It's almost like that Ukraine is the 51st state of the United States and the second language.
We talked about this like a month ago. I was saying to you that in the top defense budgets by country, United States is number one and United States to Ukraine is number three.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man, the amount of money they're sending over there.
It's like it's a state. That's the way I'm looking. And Ukrainian should be the second national language of the United States. With all this being said, you know, we have the debt to GDP rising, trillions of dollars that are going overseas. I'm telling you, this thing is just going to blow up and it's going to be fucking disastrous. And that whole, I talked about the budget office, they were predicting very conservatively 19 trillion, I think the number. There's a war that breaks out. Forget that. Throw that shit out the window. Sharp up to the right, that's where you're going to see everything go. And the US dollar is going to get absolutely wrecked. But you know what? With all this, Joey, we got some sage financial advice from somebody by the name of Gabriel Rubin, who writes for the Wall Street Journal. And he writes, quote, to save money, maybe you should skip on breakfast, end quote. I don't know. To me, this seems like a very North Korean type.
Did you see that other article from maybe also the Times about next time you see the price of eggs, you know, think about this. It's not as bad as you think. And the article is basically like, well, you could be, you know, dying or whatever in the streets like people were in the 1800s. You know,
it
could be worse. Like, could be worse is not where you want to be politically. That's not the argument you want to be making. You could be still living in a cave, you know, running
print
from
the shirts
or whatever.
Like, print the shirts.
Could be.
To tell people that to skip breakfast and that's one way to help make ends meet, that may work for some adults. If you're working like in construction, you have to eat. You know, some jobs you just have to take in the calories. And also children, you can't send them to school hungry. Newborns, you can't tell them to skip meals. There's so many people out there, you can't fucking skip meals. This is just the reality. They have to get fed when they have to get fed. Fuck this whole thing, I shake my head from Gabriel Rubin. But also auto loans. I talk about this a little while. There's a chart that came out, the 30-day and 60-day delinquencies, they continue to rise to the point where we used to be back in 2008. Did Gabriel Rubin tell people that they should also skip on their car payments? I'd love to know if he also suggested that. But really, this whole thing about the car loans, they're saying it impacts the people with the lowest credit scores. This is the exact same thing that happened in 2008. The people that don't have can't pay. And it's a domino effect, and shit is going to get out of hand. I don't know, Joey. What are your thoughts?
Two things. One, the U.S. has sent, like I mentioned, about $2 billion so far. Sorry, $200 billion to aid in Ukraine. An astute observer on Twitter noted that the USA has something around somewhere around 330,000 homeless people. Just to give you an idea of how much money that is, you could give every one of those 330,000 people $600,000.
And that's a life-changing amount of money.
My voice just cracked saying the number, man. $600,000.
That's a life-changing amount of money to give somebody a one-shot.
But instead, it's going overseas. And so, like, how do you justify that? When you talk about like shit hitting the fan because the have-nots are becoming more and more have-not, this is what we're talking about. I don't have it in my notes here. I should have written it down. But the CIBC director of investments made a great point the other day about something I said on this show 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago about fault lines and how fault lines emerge in society when the economy doesn't work for a lot of people. We got to get this guy on the show. I got to send him that clip and hope he comes on the show because he wrote the exact same thing that I said. You have introduced a number of fault lines. And if we keep letting 100,000 immigrants in who can't find homes, can't find jobs, can't find doctors, it's a recipe for disaster. It's a societal disaster brewing here, and we're not prepared for it. We just keep waving this flag like immigrants welcome. All that aside, okay? When it comes to inflation, the war, all this stuff, Lynn Alden had a couple of really good charts for people who say that the war is what's causing the inflation. Now, you're right about the GDP thing. Again, a shell game that you and I talk about fairly often. GDP, every dollar that gets spent, taxed, saved, given to someone else, given back. It all just continues to add to this GDP number that really has no meaning anymore. It's got no meaning. There's no meaning to GDP. Lynn makes a good point here that at a time when in the 70s, for example, we had the Vietnam War, a lot of the real debt as a percentage of GDP was part of the war effort. And now what we're seeing is war and new bank lending not really making as big an impact as it did before. But what you are seeing is deficits and money growth as a percentage of GDP continuing to go up. And so there's no doubt here that this is a beast of the Federal Reserve and policymakers' creation in the United States. To your point about, you know, what's the next shoe to drop? We talk about this all the time. What's the next shoe to drop? You talked about entitlements, and I think entitlements are honestly like going to be a big deal because every podcast I listen to that isn't overtly sort of apolitical makes mention that the answer is to either raise taxes or raise the entitlement age / cut entitlements. And this is, I think, one of the pillars of the social contract between government and its citizens. I'm going to work my whole life. I'm going to give you all my best years to push the country forward for the next generation. All I ask is for 15 good ones on you at the end of the road before I kick the bucket. It's morbid, kind of somber, but ultimately this, I think, noble thing that separates modern societies from the third world. And they have to keep that promise, Len, because that is, it's an incredible failure. It is the thing, I think, holding this together. The idea that at the end of the road, you're going to get something back for all your effort, for giving your life to the state, basically, directly or indirectly. If that fails, like, look the fuck out, man. And like, from as far as like Bitcoin, there's no reason now to look at the US dollar as this thing that's going to be strong in 10 years. You know, at the very least, over the last year, your currency has lost 7% of its value around that, right? What was the average in the States? It was between 7 and 9, I think, for them. And then over here, it was between 6 and 8, I think. So, you know, about 7%, let's say 7.5% across North America, that's how much you lost. In Europe, it's even more. I think the UK had a double digit print, right? Or a nine, mm-hmm. a high nine print.
No, they did have a double digit for at least 1 month, maybe more.
So there you go. So you have to know that you need something else. And like I mentioned earlier, I think that people, even people who don't hold Bitcoin, the thing that Bitcoin price doesn't measure and that Bitcoin wallets don't measure and that the number of people who transact in Bitcoin, the dollars transacted per day, the exahash, the network security, the thing that it doesn't measure is how many people are only one more currency problem away from making their first buy. How many people are only one more negative story about the dollar, or how many people are only one more rumor about the retirement age going from 65 to 67? How many people are closer and closer and closer? Price doesn't measure any of that stuff. And one thing I think that the S adoption curve people are missing, it's not about, it isn't in part about, like, you know, banking the third world, making sure people have rails to use when they can't get dollars, blah, blah, blah. The thing that they're missing is the S adoption curve, I think, is already in the chamber, okay? These people are in the hopper. The question is, how close are they? How many more negative externalities are they going to tolerate before they say, I got to buy some Bitcoin. I got to buy one coin with some of my retirement money. I got to cash some of my TFSA. I got to buy one coin. I got to decrease my RSP contributions. I got to get to one coin. That number, Len, is growing by the day. And as boomers die out, what you're going to find is more of those people are competent enough to do it on their own. They're familiar with digital currencies and digital tech, and they're willing to have this kind of thing on their phone or on a hardware wallet in a way that the boomers are not. And as that wealth transfer continues, there's going to be more and more opportunities for those people to cross the line. That's the thing the S curve is missing. And once that happens, there's no turning back. So let's sit back and watch. We'll keep making the show. Okay. Here's to another 100 episodes, another 100 weeks. I think that this is a great time for people to be buying, because this unmeasured mass of people who are close, you don't want to miss when they step over the line for the first time.
Let's move on, because
we got one guy in the green room here already. We got one guy named the Sharona in the green room, and Boomer's going to come on for a bit too. So we got two. I don't know if anyone else is going to take the bait here, but busy chat. So Peavine might come on. He's got an announcement to make that I'll make for him if he can't make it in. Do we have anything else? Are we done?
I'll do one Clown World North thing, because I think this is pertinent. And so there's the governing liberals have released what is called a just transition plan. I love it. I mean, that's a, I can understand why they use that, because of the just inflation talks, just transition. It's a 32-page plan, and it's going to transition Canada's labor force to a clean energy economy that will not result in massive job losses, according to the government. The plan is to transition Canada's labor force to respond to climate change, says a clean energy economy will not prompt massive unemployment in the country's energy towns. The clean energy economy will create so many jobs, there may not be enough workers to fill them all. It also says that the global demand for oil will be down 75% by 2050, and the demand for gas will be half what it is today. All I gotta say, I'm gonna say no comment about it. I will leave it at that. You can make your own thoughts about that. It's just,
I just want to add one thing there. Like, I won't even go in on the plan because I didn't read the plan. But Len, the idea that you can, in a 32-page plan, exactly, you read my mind. The idea that you can do this in a 32-page plan is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There was a guy on Macro Voices. I wish I could remember his name, and I might have said this on the show, but I'm going to say it again. No one is saying that getting away from carbon-based fuels is a bad idea. I think everyone agrees that at some point, this is going to be in the best interest of most people to go to energy that is cheaper if we can figure out how to make it persistent and effective. Okay, no doubt. Nuclear, great example.
I argue against it. I would argue against it.
You want more power. You want more expensive power.
No. You're saying to go to transition to something else. I'm guessing off to internal combustion engines into something else. Is that
like if we can do nuclear? No, like I mean internal combustion is fine. I mean, generally speaking, like if you can power a city with a nuclear plant instead of using coal electricity or something.
Oh,
like
hey, that, all the more power, man.
Yeah, you do it right, and I don't think a lot of people would say the opposite. Like this is the thing that Bitcoiners are often painted as unfairly. I think like I love internal combustion engines. I love oil and gas. I want to stay forever. I don't care what the consequences are.
I like both EV and ICE, internal combustion.
There's good things.
There's applications for each of them.
Yes. You're right. And the thing that this guy on Townsend's show said is that it's not that people don't want to get away from this. It's that if you try and do anything 2 feet at a time instead of 1 foot after the other, the example he gives is put on your pants. Everyone knows how to put on pants and that putting on pants is an important part of the day. But nobody just jumps up and tries to slam into their pants with two legs at the same time. What they do is they put 1 foot on the floor, 1 foot on the bed, or they sit on the bed, and they pull the pants up carefully to make sure the pants are on and they don't fall down. What we are trying to do here and other places as well is the equivalent of trying to get your pants on both feet at the same time. You're going to make a mistake because you don't have a transition plan. And so when I hear transition in the title, I think to myself, how can this be done? We're going to undo 100 years of industry that relies on gas, coal, and hydrocarbons, basically a hydrocarbon millennium, a hydrocarbon century. We're going to undo it in 10 years, 20 years, is the most generous interpretation of events here. By 2050 is the one I keep hearing now.
By this afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I don't understand how anyone can think this is possible. It's a lot of posturing from governments to gain support, political or otherwise. I would say political probably more often than not for this cause because it sounds good and people like it. And I think broadly, you and I have talked about this before. No one understands enough about this stuff to say why it's a bad idea. Even us, I think we can get closer than most people to say why with some detail, but a lot of people who vote can't get closer and are too far removed from the sort of consequences of something like this, right? Like Thunberg always says, no one knows where the energy comes from. They just know when they flick the switch, the light goes on. And so when someone tells them, we have to make this energy cleaner, they go, okay. They don't assume that the light might not turn on if the energy is clean or intermittent, whatever. And so I would caution people. I'm going to have to read this report because 32 pages, as much as I'm kind of poking fun at it, is short enough to digest. So I don't know. Maybe I'll have to take a look. Is it public? Is it available?
It is. Yeah. I'm going to actually post a link.
And, send it to me. I'll put it in the show notes too. I want to start making the show notes good for people. So again, like we used to when we first started, when we cared about that kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's naive to think that it's going to be that clean a transition, no pun intended. You can't undo that many decades of hydrocarbon industry. Got a third taker for the after show here, Len.
I just posted the link there. So if you want to take a look at it, go nuts. But yeah, let's do it. Because I have a no coiner, I'm going to skip it. Screw it. This is the people skip show. It. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I sent three people the link. We're going to bring on the Shohana. The Shorana. My eyes, not as good as they were a couple of years ago. Here we go. We're going to bring them on. Sir, madam, how are you? Good evening. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Been watching guys all the way like 3 months now. Nice. Good job, amazing job, and thank you very much.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. I would just say I don't have that much to talk about. This is sort of impromptu. But I'm originally from Nigeria, just moved to Canada. Talking about CBDC, I definitely want to talk about that. The questions I also have, another question is people that know about Bitcoin or that are slowly being sort of orange peeled, for example, like Jordan Peterson. I don't know if you saw recently, he sort of wanted he tweeted about donations. And I've forgotten what platform he used. He was saying you can donate to this place or something like that. But why don't people like that use Bitcoin? like they know, like, and they know that, look, this thing can easily be censored.
We lose him? We lose him? His audio's off. Maybe he pulled his headphones out.
I was going to ask him, is he from Abuja, Lagos? I'd love to know, too.
We got to find out.
From Nigeria.
Here he goes. He's back. He's back. Okay, continue.
Sorry about that. Yeah. From Nigeria, Lagos specifically.
Yeah.
My father. I'm sure people might know if anyone listens, Agege site. So another thing is, of course, if there are topics about like Africa and Nigeria and just the mentality or how people are using crypto, I have to say crypto, but hopefully people start using Bitcoin more. But, you know, I can definitely, you know, answer questions and the mentality and the mindset of people in Nigeria. Like, that's something I would. Happy Families Day, by the way, from Canada. I think this is my first one.
You too. Okay, so what you were going to ask us a question, but I think maybe it's better if we ask you a question since you're the one with
I'd love to know
on the ground experience. Yeah. What is the attitude of CBDCs over there? And maybe what's the general feeling about Bitcoin? We see a lot of stuff on Twitter, but you know better than us. So let's hear it.
Pretty much I'd say everything mainly happens in Lagos. Lagos, Abuja, maybe Port Harcourt as well. Port Harcourt is where I'd say the oil is.
That's the Delta?
Politics. Delta, Port Harcourt, that's the eastern side where the Igbos are. They own the oil. Kind of how Washington, D.C., that's what Abuja is. So politics, decision-making and stuff. But like the California of Nigeria is probably Lagos. It's like the California plus the New York plus the Texas, I would say, is Lagos. So that's where everything mainly happens. That's where and that's where I would say, you know, if Jack, the Twitter guy, if he goes to Nigeria, like he's definitely going to Lagos, definitely, for sure. That's where brain power, everything, that's where most of the stuff are there. So, and in regards to the CBDC, like, again, most people don't use it generally. People by default, even if they want to sort of have something digital, their finance digitally, they are still the few people who are very educated enough or very, I don't want to use the word progressive, very understanding of modern society and stuff like that. They would still lean into generically crypto. You know, young people, things like that, they will still lean into crypto. If they are like, okay, proper assets and they want to keep something, there are still people that would put their money, I would say, in Bitcoin. Like at the end of the day, if they like have to choose something, they would go to Bitcoin. Like, and yeah, and again, these are for people who have been in it for a while, I would say. Yeah, so that's pretty much. But again, it's mostly like it's not a mainstream thing for the CBDC. It's not like you can just go to the street and I'll just say it in my language, yalamala. Someone selling local dishes on the street, and you ask her what is CBDC, like. But there's a higher chance that she might have heard of Bitcoin, and of course, because she's semi-literate, she sees Bitcoin as everything. You know, she sees Bitcoin as the whole game, pretty much. Yeah, I don't know if that answered the question.
I got a question with the CBDC. Are there any restrictions from using it? I mean, are you unable to use it for buying certain things? Are there any restrictions imposed on individuals, like it expires after a certain period of time? I'd love to know
I would say that I haven't been to Nigeria for the past, I'd say like two and a half years, I would say. So real time right now, I can't put like a definite answer to that. Of course, earlier on, let's just say it was something like rich people, and it was a very small amount of people that were using it. And it wasn't, it wasn't something like you could, it wasn't mainstream. It wasn't like retailers could use it where, you know, they're using it to pay for their corn that they buy on the streets or their, you know, it wasn't something, it's not something like that. And even now, based on my understanding and when I pretty much send money back home, you know, give a couple of my friends that are still in Nigeria, like, hey, if I want to give them, send money to Western Union or something, like, it would definitely be, no, they don't even bring it up. So that's, over the past 2 years, that's how I know it's not mainstream enough. Wow. Like, they it's much easier for them to get, to be frank, crypto. I would always tell them only Bitcoin, I'm only sending Bitcoin. But it would be much easier for them to convert either Bitcoin or any other crypto to Naira, get cash, send it to my Wema bank or send it to my first bank, or these are banks in Nigeria, GTB bank, send it to the network, you can easily change it, convert it, than for me to, they don't even bring it up CBD. Like, so it's not mainstream, I would say, you know.
That's good. I mean, that's good to hear. Yeah, I like that. Okay, Sharona, thanks for coming on, man. You broke the ice there. You're the first message I got. So we appreciate it, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Anyway.
Take care.
I was gonna ask a question. Before I lost just real quick, I don't know if you guys can talk about this. Might not be this episode, but later on. Just do you think, for example, people like Jordan Peterson, do you think they are willing enough to say, for example, there was something he was going to do on Twitter recently. He did on Twitter. He announced something on Twitter and there was a donation he needed or something like that. And he pretty much one of this, I can't remember the platform he used, but why somebody commented and said, like, why aren't you using Bitcoin? You know, this platform can easily be censored. You know, this platform, they can take it away, different things like that. Why aren't, he did reply, Jordan Peterson did reply saying he wants to learn more and stuff like that. But we know that he has been semi orange peeled, you know, by Breedlove and things like people like that.
Right.
Why do you think people like that do you think people like that would be, we know it's because, you know, Bitcoin goes up and down, the volatility and things like that. But are people willing enough to, like, okay, they want to start a new project, they use Bitcoin knowing that, like, you know, the volatility is going to go down. But if I can get the whole world using Bitcoin or a big amount of my community using Bitcoin, it's a bigger reward than just using long-term, than just using, you know, the dollars or using all these platforms or this donation something. And the second question, sorry about that, is I've also noticed recently that there's been a relationship between most Bitcoiners. They are very, I don't know if it's because of science, maths, programming or whatever, they are less woke, I would use that word. They're more family oriented. They're more things like that. I don't know if I'm going off topic, but that was one question I would definitely like for people like you who have been in the industry for a while too. Why are they more attached to, you know, to, they're not pro wokeness and things like that. But that's just a topic, hopefully. Yep. Sorry. You were going to say something.
These are good questions. I'll try and do it in 30 seconds and I'll pass to you, Len, for 30, because we got two other people waiting. This is a good question. The thing about Peterson, I would put in the camp from earlier in the show when I said that it's only going to take one more negative externality before he comes around fully. He's not going to put up with it much longer. I think he's in that camp. You mentioned he's already talked to Breedlove and a few other Bitcoiners. I think Ben, BTC Sessions, offered some help with that Lightning donation thing, Len? So so that's one answer. The other answer, the answer to all your questions about family not being quote unquote woke, not falling for kind of the current thing is, I think it's time horizon. I think it's time preference. Bitcoiners are longer term thinkers, either because of Bitcoin or, you know, are in Bitcoin because they're longer term thinkers. And those things just are, they're short term. They're very short term. Mm. They're the current thing, right? Len, what do you think?
Mm. The first question is, I don't know why more people don't accept it. Last year in Canada, it was shown why it is that Bitcoin is superior when you're taking that rather than anything else for donations, because everything else could potentially be seized and frozen. So, I mean, I don't know why people don't take it. They should. There's a real life examples why it's the superior way to accept donations. As for the second, honestly, I never thought about it enough, so I can't give you an answer. So I don't know. I wish I could expand on it, but I just don't have anything really to add to that. Sorry about it.
We have okay, Sharona, I'm gonna take off the
screen. Thanks,
you, brother. Yep. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we have a guy in the waiting room who might be able to answer that question. I see in the private chat there, Len. We'll bring on Boomer next. Boomer's in the chat every week. Hey. God bless you, brother. Good to see you. What's going on?
First time, long time. Guys, I don't have much to say. I just wanted to congratulate you guys. Like 100 episodes, like, and more than just congratulations, thank you.
I like the shirt,
guys,
by the way.
You guys provide a place for Canadian Bitcoiners like me can come in once a week, and it's really a place where we can get together in the chat, and we can discuss Canadian topics. And you guys have no idea how important you guys have been on my journey.
Yeah.
You know, like I stumbled upon you guys probably around episode 30 or 40. And I don't think I've missed one since. So like, again, just want to thank you. And if I have one question, what was your favorite episode of the past 100?
Oh man, fuck. That's a tough one.
You're putting us on the spot with that one. I wouldn't be able to answer because I'd have to think about it more. And it's so off the top of my head.
Who's your favorite guest we've had? Who's your favorite guest?
Favorite guest or favorite interview?
You know, one or the other, I guess. I don't know. Are they the same? Maybe the interview.
Jeff Booth is my favorite guest.
I had a lot of fun with Jeff. I think we've done a few really good ones. Like the one with Doomberg, I really enjoyed. Yes. I thought he was really civil with us. And I know we disagree with him.
Yeah. Hive Holmes, Frank Holmes.
Frank was good. Yeah.
That was a funny one. I laughed.
Michael Campbell was fantastic.
Mike was good. Like Mike.
Max Gagliardi was fantastic.
Yeah, man. Like we've had a lot of good guests. And the one thing, first of all, thanks, Boomer, for all the kind words, man. Like we've obviously met before, so it's good to like, you know, see people from the chat in person. I've done that with a few people. We've been lucky enough to do that. And one of the things I'll say about this show is that I think as we've improved, the guests have also we kind of got lucky, right? When we first started doing the show, it was the beginning of COVID. I still remember Sue Ennis coming on the show, and she like didn't have a camera, didn't have a mic, and so like as the show progressed, more people started to get comfortable in front of mics and cameras for work or for podcast appearances, and so the guests got better too, and it's been good for us. Like I don't have to worry now when people come to the show, like whether or not they're gonna have the proper equipment. We used to send emails to people with like this little PDF that my wife like branded for us for the show, all the hints and like, here's how you make this experience good for you, good for us, good for the listener, blah, blah, blah. So the show's improved because of those guests. And I mentioned at the top of the hour, the chat, like Boomer, you're in the chat every week. You're damn near a moderator. You got us a couple of good guests over the 2 years we've been doing the show too. So, we owe you some thanks as well, buddy.
Well, it's great to be a part of the community, you know, and that's what this is all about. Like that's what your show does better than any other show out there, as far as I'm concerned, is community. And in these times, we need more community.
Yeah.
And you know, there's plenty of great Canadian podcasts out there. You know, like guys like John Vallis doing great stuff. But you guys with the chat and just the way you guys run the show, it is a community and it's important. And on behalf of everybody in that chat and all the Canadians that and the non-Canadians that watch it every week, like I just want to say thank you.
We appreciate it, man.
I like the shirt too. Very, very nice. Now, yeah, let's show it off. So I do have to say one thing. You did start watching or listening to us after we hit our stride. So thank you for listening after episode 30 or 40. Is that the whole thing? I think improved tremendously. Remember the man?
It was your idea to start doing the streams. I didn't want to do the YouTube streams or two episodes a week. You wanted to do both, and I just was like, "Fuck it, whatever, let's do it." Sure.
A lot of arm twisting there. Actually, the first one was easy because it was a shutdown which forced us to do it online. Yeah. We didn't. Yeah. So yeah,
let's go.
So,
thank you. Before I go, I just want to nominate Joey and Len for co-Bitcoiners of the week.
Oh man,
it's 100 episodes in. So I don't know who the Noi Corner of the week is going to be this week, but for Bitcoiner of the week, I want co-winners Joey and Len.
Charlie Munger is my Bitcoiner of the week. I'm not going to go any further.
That's an easy one. Thanks, Boomer. We appreciate it, brother. Take care of yourself, all right? Outstanding, man. I like Boomer a lot. He's always in the chat. We met him in Waterloo that one time.
I met him elsewhere as well.
Remember he brought his dog? Say where.
I remember that, a little one. Now, I will have to say that, it's 100 episodes. We've come a long way. The production has changed quite a bit past year, and it's hopefully it only get better. So
yeah, finally, another chat regular, T-Gem, is here. Now, T-Gem is in the private chat here. He's a treasurer for a charity. I don't know if a nonprofit and charity are the same thing. I suspect they are not. But maybe before we talk about the question comment, you got to tell me about this this link you can draw for us, this line you can draw, why people don't take Bitcoin donations, payments. What do you see?
Honestly, I'd say it's – so first off, charity is a form of a not-for-profit, but – you know, they're all not making a profit is the idea. So it's just a further registration that you have to do once you set up a not-for-profit. But regardless, there's a couple reasons. One of it is just the headache of actually setting it up and doing it and holding it on the books. Like the fact that there's still, the fact that we don't have tax laws around it, you don't have an easy corporate solution. And a lot of charities and the ones I deal with, you're trying to cut down on administrative costs. So likely you don't have a large finance team. I do fractional CFO work for a charity and a treasurer for another. And on both of those, it's all about how much money can you get towards your actual programs and your efforts and trying to cut down on that administrative part. So they just don't have the teams to do it. And then on top of that, you run into issues, especially in Canada. One of the things we run into is you can only have so much of your assets be non-operational. So you also start to run into, like, this would be a great problem with Bitcoin, but if the charity I work with started accepting Bitcoin and it 100x's over the next, you know, couple years or something, suddenly we're sitting there being like, okay, we have to spend shitloads of cash. It creates planning issues that most charities, they want a steady set of, we know, like, it's all about getting recurring donations, that sort of stuff, so that you have visibility to future cash flows. And Bitcoin, the volatility makes it harder to do that. So you can really only put money you're willing to lose. And for most charities, that's not a lot. So they don't look to it as a strategy. And I've actually, we are, now that Noster is out, you can zap posts.
Yeah.
I've actually brought it up and we are talking to our IT person and stuff about, and social media about, can we get on Noster and just, you know, set up a Noster account, be the one charity that's posting there and get some zaps that way. And then we'll have to set up a Bitcoin wallet, but it'll only be these tiny little amounts. And so I am looking at ways to get it in, but it's a tough sell. You would just also naturally tend to have kind of an older crowd running some of these charities and more conservative, that sort of thing. So it's just, I've had a number of conversations and it's always met with like, oh, that's interesting. Like, there's not a lot of pushback necessarily. I wouldn't say that any of them are sitting there thinking it's, you know, drugs and crime and that sort of stuff. I'm not getting that sense, but there's certainly not like, I've maybe got like one person out of the two charities and like the 10 or 20 people I've talked to about it there who's like actually has ever bought some.
So when are you going to stream our show to these people? Because it sounds like
the next board meeting. We got to get this on the mic. Dude,
I will send no offense, guys. I will send them to you later just because when you get rolling downhill, you're going to scare them. I'm going to send them over to Ben or something first. Let them get onboarded, you know. A little calmer, and then when they're ready for the rants, they'll come over.
I like it.
Because I love the downhill. But also, guys, yeah, I wanted to come on and really just say congrats and cheers and everything. And I haven't been able to meet you guys because I'm out in Vancouver, but you guys met my parents at the event. Len, I think, yeah, Joey said you. I think you might have had to take off or something, and they missed you, but. They were able to meet you, and so you've helped to orange pill some of my family, so I appreciate that.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
I love it, man. Thanks, T-Gem. We appreciate it, buddy. Yeah, take care of yourself. You're the last guy up. Do you want to give the sign off? The sign off. You can go ahead.
I mean, like, I was just gonna say, you know, anything accounting related, please feel free to send me a DM. I'm always happy to jump in and provide finance stuff. But I usually listen here and kind of have it in the background on my TV and stuff. So I actually, by the time it ends, no, you're not noise, but by the time it gets to this part, I'm kind of like, all right, we're just sitting here shooting the shit. So I don't really you know, always catch the end of it, guys. I'm sorry.
We actually don't even really have a sign.
Friends and enemies. Like,
yeah.
That's all I got.
I love it. Thanks, brother. Yeah, well, okay, so if you got accounting questions or if we have them, we'll tell you. And
not so much a general thing. You guys.
Cheers, T-Gem. Thanks, right. brother.
Talk later, guys.
Outstanding. Good guy.
These talking shows. We could do a third episode a week.
We have some really like genuine, smart, kind people who listen to the show. And we've met him at meetups. You met his parents at a meetup. I'm sure they were nice people to raise young really man nice. Like that.
I spent maybe 15 minutes chatting with
them. How can you go wrong, man? Bitcoiners are where you want to be. This is the place you want to be for people, for intelligence, for the future of money. This is it. No doubt. So that's it.
We'll do the third show, Colin style. Come on in. Love line one week.
If you're gun shy, the next time I ask for love line or call in, don't be shy. It's easy. You come on, we shoot the shit with us, and then that's it. You're done for the night. Cheers to us at the end, and then TTYL. Piece of cake.
The next time you do a call like that, the love line, I wasn't going to participate, but maybe I'll just call in and just do like various voices and shit. So at least we could try to pump the numbers. It looks like you have like 15 people that wants to talk to you, Joey, but really it's just me 14 times. And I think I could do it. I could come up with 14 different topics and all that. So next time you do that call, I'm there for you, buddy. I'll help you out.
Killer. I appreciate that. Thanks for listening, watching everyone this week and every week. And look for Len's interview with Fountain. And take care of yourself. So then, man, stay safe and all that other good stuff. Do people still stay safe? That's a very professional of me to say. I don't know why I said that. I'm obviously brain drained here. But what is the thing? What is the thing you always say now? The thing from Noster.
Take care and PV.
I love it, man. That's great. We're done. Great. Good show.